Little Emily biting her sister, or is teenage Barry refusing to help around the house? Consulting psychologist David Carey joins us to answer all your parenting woes. David Carey joins us once again. Good afternoon, David.
And good afternoon, Sean.
Now, my 8-year-old daughter has started picking at her face. What starts as a little accidental scratch becomes a scab from repeated picking. She's become scarred. She seems to do it by habit. She's not in any way an anxious child. She's happy at home with her siblings and in school, and there have been no changes in her life recently. She used to bite her nails, but stopped eventually with bribes and incentives. I've given out to her for picking, explaining how she'll damage her skin. She says she can't stop herself and has become upset about it. What should I do?
I think you might want to get a little bit of treatment for this 8-year-old. It is a habit, and she probably can't stop it. Now, there is a technology called habit reversal therapy. It doesn't take a long time. We're probably talking 6 to 8 visits. It can be quite successful. I'm assuming that the little girl may become aware of the early warning signs of needing to pick at her face. If she isn't, we'll have to teach her about those. Mm-hmm. But it's unlikely just to disappear on its own. And I'm concerned because she already has a scar. Excuse me. So since she's already scarred from it, we don't want it to continue because it can lead to more scars.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if she keeps picking the same spot over and over again, the risk of infection increases. So, not knowing more about this child's life, and I would again, as I so often do, talk to teacher. Let's find out if everything's okay in school.
Right.
Because just assuming that she's happy and likes school because she's cheerful and going off every morning, you could be wrong. Probably nothing, but let's look into it a little bit. And then I think if, in fact, you discover there are no stress points in her life, think about your own family situation, by the way. Are you and your partner sharing some information that can be distressing to the child in earshot? You know, sometimes parents talk about their financial difficulties or, oh, I don't know how we're going to pay the mortgage this month. And children pick up on that and causes them a bit of distress. So investigate yourself. Talk to teacher. If everything's all well and good, talk to the GP, by the way. See if there's any medical condition underlying this, any dermatological condition. And if everything's okay, look for some habit reversal therapy.
Yeah.
It can be very helpful.
Yeah, but it might be something, as you know, there might be something behind it, but it might be no more than she's just gone into a bad habit of doing it.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the most likely scenario, actually.
Yeah.
Bad habit. We have to then hope it goes away, but she's already scarred.
Mm.
I don't know how long we want to wait and hope, Sean, you know?
Yeah.
That's the only worry. If it wasn't for the scarring, I'd say remind her, distract her, giving her something to hold in her hand, a stress ball or such, or some squeezy thing that she can be holding most of the time. I'm wondering also, is she doing it at night while she's sleeping?
Mm.
That needs to be observed a little bit by parents.
I have an 8-year-old female neighbor that is very rough playing with my young 4-year-old. I have told her on numerous occasions to be gentle, but she's not listening to me and tends to get a kick out of knocking my child around the place. What do I do? I don't want to row with anyone over this.
Well, you have to protect your child.
You do, yeah.
So I think it's time to tell the 8-year-old you can't play unless you can play nice. You probably need to observe and supervise the play experience from now on. But if I like this phrase, knocking my child around the place, that sounds pretty severe, you know.
Mm.
I wouldn't let an 8-year-old play with a 4-year-old necessarily. That's a very interesting and significant developmental difference.
Yeah.
It's 4 years.
Yeah.
But it's not just the 4 years.
Mm.
It's someone just leaving toddlerhood and entering full childhood, and someone else already in full childhood. And I don't know anything about the 8-year-old, so we don't know what's going on in her life and whether she's a rough and tumble kind of girl to begin with, or does she have self-regulation problems and emotional control difficulties. But it needs a lot of supervision. And I think number one responsibility, you have to keep your child safe.
Yeah.
That comes before even the issue of, I don't want to row with anyone over this.
Mm.
You have to be sure your 4-year-old is safe from harm at all times. And since you know who the perpetrator is, I'm kicking him around the place, going to have to do something about it.
And presumably it's happening in their house or in their back garden.
Yeah.
And, you know, they can tell the 8-year-old to go home.
Well, that's a simple solution.
Yeah.
If you can't play nice, you have to go home. There's no herding and there's no pushing allowed in our house, our garden, front or back, or in front of the house or anywhere else. We're not going to let you hurt little Johnny, and that's the end of the story. Now, do you think you can play nice? Yes. Okay, fine. Let's give it a try. And there's no second chances after that.
Yeah.
Banished.
We have a little boy who is 2 years and 2 months, who is not talking much. He has said a number of words, but really doesn't seem concerned with talking as a general rule. He's a happy boy with no other issues and seems to understand when we give him instructions. I dropped into our local HSE speech therapist clinic and she signed my husband and me for a communication workshop to learn strategies to develop his speech. He has also been signed up for a speech assessment on the public list, which we were told would happen in maybe 8 or 9 months' time. The speech therapist was of the view that strategies at home work better at the age he is now than sessions in a formal environment. Just wondering if David has any advice on this.
Well, I think you need to trust the speech therapist because this is their area of expertise. And so far as I'm aware, the speech therapist is really on to the right tack here, that at this age, it's home intervention. I have mentioned on air a number of times playing the game of say what they do or say what you see them doing. Oh, you have the ball. Oh, you have the red ball, and then take the ball from them and put it in front of their face. Red ball, or might even start simpler. Ball, ball. This gives the child a vocabulary. You need the concrete object and the visual to help the child link what they're seeing with the label for it. And that will help stimulate linguistic development. Beyond that, in the case of 2 years and 2 months old children, direct therapeutic intervention is much less common, to be honest. So the therapist is suggesting take your communication course. Now that's 8 or 9 months from now, but just do a quick Google search and look for what can I do to stimulate my child's language development. All that information is on there. I don't even know if 8 or 9 months from now, you might not even need the course. Language develops at its own pace.
Yeah.
We have these general guidelines, and sometimes we fall into the trap of thinking that by 2 years and 8 months, the child should be saying three-word sentences, et cetera, et cetera. Well, no two are alike, as we all know. Some children just don't talk until they're 3.5 and 4. And not much we can do about it. Make sure you get a speech and language therapy assessment whenever you're in doubt, or talk to a speech and language therapist. If you're not happy waiting the 8 or 9 months, see if you can go privately, if you have the wherewithal to do that now, financially, I mean. But I would tend to say use the suggestions that the speech and language therapist has given you. A very good Google search will lead you to even more suggestions. Implement them. Play word games. A word-rich environment is really good for children like this.
Yeah.
They need to hear adults speaking.
Interesting, because I was actually only thinking about that today, because, you know, my, like, 13-month-old... Because she's got three sisters and a brother, she thinks that dinner time is when you sit around a table and shout at people because there's so much noise going on. And like she has mama, dada, baba, but she talks this complete kind of language herself the whole time.
Oh, isn't that lovely?
Is it bad to respond in kind to that? Or because she likes to play a game, she goes, whoa, she makes a noise. She's in the car. She makes a noise. And you have to make the noise back to her.
Oh, good.
Yeah, but is that bad to do that if it's gobbledygook? Or should you be strictly saying no?
No, it's not. It's not bad at all, because the little we know about the young child at that age, the young child's brain, is they're not really hearing gobbledygook. They're hearing some kind of communication.
Yes. Yeah.
And with a very significant person in their lives, the adult caregiver. I think it's good. We all do that with babies. We talk the most nonsense.
Yes, we do.
Thing, you know, where a goo goo gaga kind of stuff, you know. And that's been researched, and the researchers kind of think, yeah, the child isn't really hearing goo goo gaga. They're kind of hearing, I love you.
Yeah.
I like you.
Yeah.
We're having fun. So I would say continue doing it. And sure enough, she'll be babbling away and annoying you constantly.
Ah, she's doing that already.
Oh, good.
But it is a fascinating process. You'd wonder exactly, because, you know, she hears. You know, they're obviously mimicking sounds at first, but then something happens at some point. It connects. Oh, that sound means that.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. And the more they see concrete objects and get the label for them, the more that connection is cemented. That transfers into something else that's interesting. What a lot of people have called play writing. in 3 or 4 year olds. Now they see people writing, they see notes left at home, they can't decipher the letters and whatnot. But what do? Sometimes they scribble down things and read it to you. Now what they're scribbling isn't real letters, it's just a squiggly line. And that's the beginning of the development of written language. So, you know, these are things that just is the developmental process, and when we play with them and appreciate them and just treat it as not drama but just part of growing up with little ones, it all works out very fine in the long run.
Okay, might be more play emails in our house, I'm afraid. I've a six-year-old boy who has three younger sisters. We're having difficulty with him and his ability to control emotions. My husband has tried the technique of getting to his level of anger and calming himself, and then my son calms, teaching him how to self-control. It works to a limit. Other times he gets very emotional to the point where I have to run and grab the girls as he gets violent. I've tried mindfulness, but he just scoffs at it. Are there any books on this you could recommend, or parenting classes, or should we go to a child psychologist to get tips and tricks?
I don't know enough about the child's overall behavioral profile to recommend a book, but... And I've recommended this book so many times, it's probably out of stock in most bookshops around the country. 1-2-3 Magic is your best port of call for children with emotional regulation difficulties. What your husband is doing is the wrong tack. He's getting very emotional and arousing himself to levels of anger and then calming himself down. So what's he demonstrating? That the initial response to stress, frustration, or life's difficulties is to get very emotionally aroused.
Mm-hmm.
And the child probably doesn't have the neuronal circuitry left or developed just yet to do the calming part that husband can do with his fully mature brain. So I would encourage husband not to do that. I think what we sometimes need to do is to demonstrate what's called coping self-talk. Rather than get emotional and demonstrate strong emotion, we say aloud in front of the child, I'm really annoyed. I can't find my keys. We set up a scenario. Well, where are my keys? Oh, my God. I'm late for work. Oh, this is so... Wait a minute. Take a deep breath. Calm down here now. Where were you last? You know, coping self-talk can be very helpful. Far too often we present complete mastery models to children and they can't master these things. Their brain just isn't developed enough yet. So I would eliminate the arousal level to anger and then the calming. And I think maybe getting some kind of grip on the 1-2-3 Magic book. And in addition, is there a consequence for his complete loss of control to the point you have to rescue the girls?
Yeah.
There has to be a consequence. Mm-hmm. We don't just sit and talk to them. Now, that's not nice, Johnny. You really shouldn't be doing that. We need consequences.
Yeah.
Some kind of discipline.
Christine says, this is on we had the question about the two-year-old, 2 years and 2 months, not speaking a lot yet. One of my sons hardly said a word until he was nearly four, and now he never stops talking. He's 22, says Christine. Someone else says, our son didn't talk beyond a babble until he was close to four after several sessions with Enable Ireland, which he resisted, but were very helpful. He's now six, vocabulary is fine, and we can't shut him up. So, as David said, it varies wildly from child to child.
Yeah, I hear that story over and over and over again for the last 35 years. Didn't say a word until he was four, and now I can't shut him up.
Yeah. My nine-year-old daughter has trouble going off to sleep on her own. It can take her up to 3 hours to get off to sleep. It's like sleep training a toddler all over again. It normally results in head or back rubbing or sitting at her bedside until she falls asleep. She seems anxious. Any suggestions?
Well, these are things that need a bit of investigation. I would begin by wondering what kind of activities in the family home she's engaging in before it's bedtime. Are they stimulating or are they calming activities? Mm-hmm. Is she spending a lot of screen time? Is there horseplay with her? Are you playing games and stimulating her, laughing and having fun? Well, nothing in itself wrong with that, but that can sometimes arouse a person to the point where they lose the need to sleep. Second issue is, what time are you sending her to bed? We don't know.
Yeah.
You know, we don't all have the same body clock, and sometimes we send our 9-year-olds to bed at 8 or 9, and their body and brain just isn't ready to go to sleep yet.
Yeah.
And they're lying there for 2 hours awake. Third issue is, are you perhaps reinforcing the inability to go to sleep by all the back rubbing, by staying in the room with her for 3 or 4 hours, which is excessive? You have to sometimes fight the good fight, and it means 2 or 3 sleepless nights on your part and your partner's part, but often it corrects itself pretty quickly when they realize that mommy or daddy isn't going to immediately come to the rescue and stay there. There's nothing wrong with some comforting. A 9-year-old doesn't need excessive comforting for sleep problems.
Mm.
For young babies, there's never an issue of how much time you should spend comforting them. They need that, and we must provide it. But at age 9, it can become a rather dysfunctional need.
Yes.
So I don't know what's feeding this behavior. What is she eating? Is she drinking any stimulating beverages at night? There are often just so many questions that need to be answered that you need to look at the whole scenario and try to find out. Going off to sleep on her own takes her up to 3 hours. What time are you putting her to bed?
Yeah. And, I wonder, are screens involved there before bedtime?
What does that say? Oh, screen time.
Yeah,
well, that's another big issue.
Mm.
And the general rule, by the way, and most parents have a real problem with this, is no screens 2 hours before bedtime.
Yeah, and that's easier said than done, of course.
Oh, you better believe it.
Yeah. my son and his friends in the neighborhood age from 6 to 9 love playing football in the neighborhood. They play on the communal grass where we can see them. My older neighbors are going mad as they are ruining the grass and are afraid of being hit on the head with a football. They also hate the noise level. I think it's wonderful as they are not indoors playing with their tablets, etc. Every time my son goes outside with a football in his hand, the neighbors are telling him to go home. He can't even kick it against our wall. It's driving him crazy as he loves football. Please, advice on this. Just to say, I'm mindful of the grass being worn too, as I don't want to live in an unattractive neighbourhood either. But I'm willing to maintain it along with the other parents. Also, I want them to be mannerly and be careful of the elderly while playing.
Well, I think this is a modern dilemma. And
isn't
just
it just,
you can't win. Most parents want their children outside kicking the ball around, not in front of a screen. And here we have these grumpy old gits next door that are telling the child, go home, you're making too much noise, you're ruining the grass. Talk to the neighbors. Let's start on a nice way. Myself and my friends that have young children are very interested in keeping our neighborhood a friendly, happy place. We're a community. What we're going to do is see to it that the grass is tidied and kept neat after the children play. We're going to do our best with that. Certainly, we don't want them endangering any elderly person walking by kicking a football. Now, that's a health and safety issue.
Mm.
And there's a lot of primary schools in this country that forbid the kicking of balls at yard time because someone's got knocked in the head, knocked over, etc., teacher and or child. So we have to be mindful of that. We have to help the youngsters know that as soon as an elderly person, what's elderly, I guess, I don't know, to a 9-year-old, anyone over 30 is elderly, to stop kicking the ball. You know, just suspend the game until the coast is clear. I think if decent neighborly communication with a genuine effort on the part of you and your neighbors to repair and keep the common area nice and tidy, if that doesn't work and the old gits are still saying, go home, I'd sure be out there myself and telling them to shut up and leave my son alone.
Yeah.
I wouldn't go down that road first, though. We want to try a decent, helpful approach.
Yeah, maybe I'm reading too much between the lines, but it sounds like an intergenerational thing that perhaps a generation who are around retirement age, they've done the kids thing, and that's just annoying now, these people who've moved in with their kids, and they were there longer, therefore they have the right to tell their neighbors what they're supposed to do.
They have the ownership of the common area, too,
yeah.
It can't be all the elderly neighbors doing that, though.
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
Because isn't it a joy to come home and see kids playing on the grass?
I just think it's wonderful. And, you know, this is a country in which the vast majority of our older citizens love young people.
Yeah.
Love to be around them, love to talk with them. One of the things I think, and I'm going a little bit off track here, that we're not doing enough is encouraging our children to talk to their older neighbors.
Yeah.
And ask them questions about their life. There is so much history in the head of our older citizens in this country, history that can be easily lost. They have stories that are really interesting. And sometimes we adults don't want even to listen to them.
It's true.
Never mind children. It's just a richness there that needs to be groomed so you grow a healthy community. Everybody wins.
Is there a good way to help my 12-year-old be a little less sensitive and not take schoolyard slagging to heart so much? She would benefit hugely from being able to let things go, move on, and get on with having fun. I was the same as a child and wish I could have been a bit tougher.
Ooh, this is a tough one. The sensitive child who doesn't have the comebacks. It could be a boy or a girl. And so they're left defenseless in the face of good-natured slagging, which, of course, is the way of life in this country that proves you have a friend.
Yes.
Because your friend isn't necessarily going to affirm you and say, what a great guy you are, Sean.
No, it's how we show affection, you bollocks.
Exactly, exactly. And that's a cultural artifact that a lot of people who don't live in Ireland have to learn, by the way.
Mm.
So it isn't just children who misinterpret this. How do you get around it? Well, I think one, explaining as best you can, that, look, your friends are, this is what's called good-natured fun. And we sometimes say these things. And you don't have to take it so seriously. If the child has no comebacks, give them a few.
Yeah.
Have them tell you what was said to them, and then give them, well, you could have said this, or what would have happened, I wonder, if you had said this instead of just letting your feelings get hurt. Role play it a little bit. Teach. These skills can be taught. And we're probably not talking about a child who's absolutely crippled with social anxiety, which is a huge problem, very hard to deal with. So I think some role playing, some cue provision, some suggestions about what you can do, and some basic instruction. Honey, they're not trying to hurt your feelings. They're just being friendly, and this is what we do sometimes. We say these goofy, silly things to our friends, and we're not trying to hurt them. We're basically saying, hey, you're okay, I like you, because I can say this to you, and no, you won't get your feelings hurt, and you won't punch my nose down my throat because I've said it to you. So some instruction, some education, some role-playing, some provision of words that she can say back once you find out what's being said to her that's upsetting probably can solve the problem.
Somebody on Twitter says their 8-year-old has started to talk like that with a question mark at the end of every sentence. They want to know, should they put them up for adoption or send them to boarding school?
Send them to the Bronx.
Yes. Yes, that'll give you a whole new set of problems to deal with then. Listen in every Wednesday at 3 p.m. here on Moncrief for more parenting advice from David Carey.